everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Caroline Talks for the So Here's What Happened podcast, and the podcast where I speak to film and television creatives about their work and art. And today I am joined by writer and director Evan Jackson Leong to discuss his new film, Snakehead, which had a premiere at the New York Asian Film Festival, and which we're speaking during the Toronto International Film Festival. So he's had quite a busy time recently with his film, and I'm very appreciative to him for speaking with me today. So before we start talking about Snakehead, I'll just ask Evan to say a bit about himself and about the film. Evan?
Hey everyone, my name is Evan Jackson Leong, and I'm a sixth generation Chinese American, and having this film premiere here at Toronto is truly, truly a dream and an unbelievable experience, really, as a filmmaker. Really, I look at this moment as one of the most momentous in my life. So it's great to be here.
Great. So like you mentioned that you're a sixth generation immigrant, which is what the film Snakehead is about. It's about immigrants and about the struggle for immigrants in North America in particular, learning to trying to survive and doing what they have to right. to survive in North America, because it's not all roses, and it's not like the streets are not paved with gold. It is not easy. You don't arrive and everything works perfectly, especially for our characters. Suga, well, in English translation, Sister Su, played by Shuya Chang, she came over illegal, so she would be considered an illegal immigrant, and her start is very rough, because she had to abandon her daughter so that she wouldn't be arrested, and she would be was separated for her for 8 years, and her journey is one, I think, that takes a very unexpected turn, because, like, you when the film starts, you're wondering how it's going to end, and the way it does is was very unexpected, but makes perfect sense for the character and the story that you've created. So can you just tell me a bit about coming up with the script and the story, especially centering around snakeheads, which are the people who smuggle in illegal immigrants, or I should say specifically Chinese immigrants into America?
Sure, yeah. I mean, this story, you know, is inspired by a true woman that was smuggling, Fujianese in the 80s and the 90s in New York Chinatown. And, you know, what really fascinated me about this story and this project was that it's centered around a strong Asian female, right? And I don't really get to see that in film that often. And yet in my life, there are a ton of strong Asian women that are the foundation of any community and family. And, you know, I think, you know, the smuggling and my immigrants coming in, I mean, that is definitely an issue that's always, you know, people always move. I mean, throughout history, people are always migrating. And what fascinated me as a sixth generation Chinese American, you know, I grew up here, right? My parents grew up here, my grandmother grew up here in America. And, you know, I'm fascinated by, you know, what it took people to leave their home for another opportunity, right? And you leave everything. And, you know, some of it is, you know, bravery, and also some of it is naivete, right, of what that journey is going to entail. And I can't wrap my head around that, because I know where anywhere I would go in the world, I would understand the advantage and disadvantage of that. But when you are a migrant traveling to a new place, you know, you're going to be faced with, you know, the underworld, right? It's just a matter of your life. And that's what I really wanted to, you know, explore and see in New York Chinatown, because there's layers and layers of stories in New York Chinatown from the, you know, the 20s to now of, you know, experiences of migrants. And, you know, none of those stories ever told. And for me, I was like, oh, you know, this is the story that's based in truth. I can use that as material to create a new sort of, you know, archetype in this world. And you know, for me, really is paying homage to, you know, the Asian women in my life.
Yeah, for sure. Like I found I've been watching films a lot, I think unintentionally, about immigration, because I myself, I'm an immigrant, originally from the Caribbean. So when you're I found for this film in particular, I love that you're showing the perspective of the emotional toll and the mental toll like being an immigrant takes on someone. Whether you come in legally, you know, using passports or whatever, whether you're coming in illegally, there is something you have to leave part of yourself behind, and it is a struggle. It is not easy to leave a life that you've led at home around people who look like you and who speak like you and who understand you, to then travel to a completely new country that you know, where you know no one, and you encounter people that you know who won't understand you and who won't, like, aren't willing to understand the hardships that you've come from, and then also what brought you there. And I think you explore that really well in the film for both Suga as well as for Daima, because you kind of show Suga is the new immigrant, whereas Daima is the old immigrant. She's been there for years and she's still struggling and still trying to find, doing what she can to hold her place and hold the power she has, because her power is not assured. She has to keep struggling and fighting, whereas Suga, she's learning this. She's learning the struggle now.
I mean, it's just so exciting to hear you even talk about my film, to be perfectly honest. you know, I mean, making this movie took such a long journey to get here, and you know, to be out in the world and sharing this, that people understand what I was trying to do, and you know, it's really, really amazing. So thank you. You know, that being said, yeah, I mean, I think the story of the immigrant is something that we'll always tell. I think that's who we are as humanity, because you know, we're constantly looking for stories of inspiration. And you know, when people have less than us, they're doing something and they're making it's inspirational, because it's like, wow, if they can survive, and we reflect on our own lives and trying to see that own, you know, perspective.
Yeah, it's, and I think centering around two women, two women who are super strong, but are still vulnerable in some sense, because I want to talk a bit about Daima, because to me she's quite complicated and she's quite a complex character, because she's has this, like, people like would compare her to like a mob boss, and she is essentially a mob boss. And that's kind of what this film is. This film to me has a very Hong Kong mob boss feel to it, and you get set that tone perfectly. But she is, with all of her hard exterior, she's also very vulnerable in some points, because she admits to feeling guilt about how her children, she doesn't have the connection to her kids that she wants to, and how she sees the faults of herself in her kids, especially Rambo, played by Sung Kang. And so can you just talk a bit about her, because I always find it really interesting when we have male writers and directors who write female characters that have so much complexity and I think so much wholeness to their characters, because frankly, that does not happen very often. Yeah. So I want you just talk about, like,
writing. It's unfortunate, right? It's unfortunate that we don't have a character that's an Asian woman that has that complexity, because we know they exist and we know that they have great stories to tell. But you know, no one's telling those stories. And so I think that was part of the struggle of making this film. It's like, how do you make something, you know, because this industry is run by, you know, what people are used to and how to make and what makes money. You know, when you make a movie like this, like, you don't know if you're going to get in the tip. You don't know if you'll ever make money. You don't know if you're just going to lose all the money you made on you used to make this movie. So, you know, I think that's, you know, a huge part of the struggle to make this, you know, that being said, Daima is, and played by Jade Wu, she's just incredible. Right. I think when I look at this film now and I see her performance, I'm like, wow, she gave me so much more than I could ever have expected. And, you know, as I'm a first time feature filmmaker, so, you know, working in the narrative space, you know, it's new to me. And I was lucky to have like these seasoned actors give me more than, you know, I would have asked for or even knew what to ask for. You know, and then as an archetype, as a character, I mean, there are a ton of women in Chinatown that are just like her, that own, you know, buildings after buildings after buildings, and they're still counting pennies, you know, and they're still going to work every day in their 80s, you know. And I think that's, to me, paying homage to a character like that, I think that's, you know, that's exciting, because you know, as much as, you know, masculinity and males run the face of families in Asian culture, when you really look at it, it's, you know, those powerful men they got a more powerful woman at home that's allowing this to happen for this man, I think, a lot of the time. And, you know, I found that to be a lot more exciting character than just a man driven by his own sort of, you know, need for power and money, right? Women, her goals are different. Her goal she's already rich, you know, and the power is there. It's like, how do I maintain? How do I build and expand this community versus, you know, trying to you know, egotistically gain everything. And I felt, you know, that's what all Asian women do, right? They build versus dominate. And I think that's what Diamond's character totally does. And you know, I was lucky, very fortunate to have someone of her Jay Moon's ability to play that character.
Yeah, no, she was fantastic. And she actually reminded me of my grandma, because my grandma was kind of the same way, where she this was a woman that was lifting like what we call soil stone, or they're made from like kauri, these big giant blocks, up until like she got sick. And she had my mom said, like, with my grandfather, like, my grandmother ran the household, but things were still like tumultuous. But like, she also made her own way, like, she built houses, she ran her own what we call a rum shop, and she was still making money, but she was still doing like a lot of the small things herself. Like when she was building our family home, she was there on the construction site every day dictating and saying like, this goes there, because she knew exactly what she wanted. So Daima kind of reminded me of that. And like, I think not only for like Chinese, older Chinese women, but I think for a lot of women that came from a particular era, that had to be something in them, because like they had to like struggle through so many things, and just like make their way. And like for any woman to have to make her way and build her own empire, whether it's a small one or a big one, you have to have a lot of confidence, you have to have a lot of surety in yourself, but also you have to have, I think, a willingness to be brutal in some sense. And it doesn't have to be violence, but you have to be able to like be able to defend
the hard decision. Sure, it's a very clear decision that's not based off emotion and more logic than anything. I think, you know, I mean, women traditionally are the ones that have to run the house, right? But we're seeing this kind of era where they run the house, and you know, there's also opportunities for them to run a business. So they're running the house and the business, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we see with a character like Daima, right? As you know, culturally, this world kind of wakens up a little bit, and women are having more responsibility. But then these women like Daima that come from this old world, era, they grew up knowing that they're responsible for the house, but now they have this opportunity to have a business on the side. And you know, a lot of the Chinese community is like that, right? With a woman that runs a household and then at the same time runs a business, because you know, the men are all going to work every day, but you know, they the women still want, you know, and they're grounded in that. And I think that's you know, it's actually quite common. Daima character is a quite common character, yet why haven't we seen that on screen, right? Which is really sad.
Yeah, I think it's that we haven't seen it on North American screens, because like I watch like a lot of Asian content, and I see women like her. There's a film called Lucky Grandma that came out, I think, I think it was 2019.
Yeah, 2019, Stacey. Yeah.
And she, like, Daima kind of reminded me of her, but then it also made me think we don't get to see a lot of Asian female characters, particular in North American films, because like, unless they're made by people like you who are of Chinese and Asian heritage, like if they're not made by you, like, and if they, like, let's put it bluntly, white people are not gonna make characters like that. They're not gonna make characters like that. Yeah, I mean,
and then again, like, who's to say that's not their, you know, I mean, you're a writer from Silver Lake in Hollywood. It's like, what do you know about this culture? And you know, is it your job, responsibility to tell that in an honest way? You can do their best, but it's like me writing a story about a Jewish family. Like, I could assume my stereotypes of what I think that is, but I don't really fully know. And yet, at the same time, you know, it's Hollywood, it's all this industry driven by a lot by money versus art. And so we go to the things that are going to make us money. You know, I think that's just the reality of it as creators.
Yeah, for sure. And so then, like, now talking, I think, like, talking about the new things, like for Suga, she's kind of like, as I said before, she's kind of like the representation of the newer generation of like, I wouldn't say necessarily of women, but I think she just represents like people not entering into society at a different place. Because when Daima became an immigrant to America, the landscape would have been completely different. And like, you know, because like there's things that she's expecting Suga to do, right? Because she's working from this, her own perceptions and her own understanding. But then she's like, Suga's like, I am not who you expect me to be. I'm not going to do what you want me to do, which I thought was brilliant. I love the fact that she kind of subverted a lot of stereotypes that Daima, another Asian woman, had of her. So just talk a bit about Suga's character and also casting Shu, because I think she's her, I love her face. And I love how she uses her face. Like, she's so badass to me. And like, this character is so badass. And I love how also, like, both of these women are badasses in their own way, but they're also like vulnerable, as I said earlier. But to me, Shuya gives Suga something I think that's very special, where she, like, her harshness comes as more as a self-defense mechanism, and also for her goal to protect her daughter. Like, she's everything she's doing is for her daughter, and which is where Daima kind of like falls, because Daima thinks doesn't know understand that that's it. She doesn't understand her motivation. She thinks it's about the money, and Suga's like, nah, this is not about the money at all. It's about my daughter. That's my main motivation.
Right. Yeah, I mean, when Suya auditions, I mean, there was something in her that I didn't get to see in a lot of Asian female actors, and it was that there's a level of confidence in her that was unmatched, that I didn't necessarily see. You know, it wasn't acting, it was just like who she was, right? I mean, you can act confident, or you can and you can be confident. And I think there's a big difference in that. And what I saw with her was the strength that I'm like, ooh, there's something there that's very, very special. That's very just like almost, you know, she's from Austria, so it's actually very German, of just making the choice and executing it. And I was like, ooh, that's a fun, that's a great archetype to play with. And, you know, I didn't know what Sister C was going to be like. You know, I had hope and expectations of what she was going to be on screen. But Suya opened up a whole new world of possibilities of what we could do with her, right? With her ability as an actor. You know, Sister C doesn't have that many lines, but we feel like we're with her throughout this whole film. Right, we understand her perspective, and it's all done with her face. It's all done in her eyes, and I mean, it's just oozing power and confidence. And you know, I think that's something that I've always, you know, hoped to have in a character in this film. But then, I mean, her execution is just unbelievable. And yet, you know, at the same time, like, why not? Why is it so rare? Right? I mean, almost every outlaw, every character in every American film has that sort of perspective of like this badass perspective of, you know, just what Hollywood movies are. And yeah, we've really never seen that, you know, as an Asian female, right? They're going to be portrayed as, you know, sexy or, you know, or dark, dorky and nerdy, right? Very, very rarely are they just normal, right? They have to be one of those sort of stereotypes. And I'm like, you know, and not to say that she's not, you know, beautiful and all those things, yeah. But at the same time, like, that's not what our goal here is to do, right? We're going to lean in on, you know, making her a complex character with, you know, with a deep past. And, you know, I always thought was really interesting was how she comes to this world. Like, you know, a lot of times movies about women are like how they gain power throughout the film and they gain confidence. And yet for me, this was more about her, just she coming in with confidence. She's already developed all those skills. That's another movie when she was 7, where she figured it out, right? And so this is someone that's hardened and lived through so much to get to this moment. We're seeing her at this moment of like strength versus this moment of like, okay, I'm gonna learn strength. You know, yeah. I think that's a, you know, it's a Western, basically, right? An outlaw coming to town and leaving, right? That's what it is.
Yeah, it is. And the thing is with this film is like, these two women, like, to me, like, they are the focal point of the film. But then there's one character that's very interesting to me is Rambo, played by Sung Kang. And his character is interesting because he's kind of like his mother in the fact that he's very harsh, he's violent, and he cusses like a pirate. But right. But there's things that I think to me that kind of revealed an immaturity, sure, and a vulnerability in him that comes up because like it's revealed that he went to prison, he went to juvenile prison, then he went to prison at a very young age because he was defending his mother. He ended up having to kill his own father. And that would have, to me, stunted his growth mentally and emotionally because he had to basically put on these extremely tough exterior and persona in order to survive. But then once he's out, he's not sure how to like work in this work, even though he's working in a very tough world, doing like smuggling for his mother and drug dealing, he's still very vulnerable. And I love, and to me that comes out in his moments with the fish, like the fish tanks. And I saw that he loves his fish. He knows everything about these fish. And that's one of the few times that we get to see him be vulnerable. And to me, it seemed that no one really understood that part about him. Like, to them, it's just a hobby. But I saw that as like almost like his therapy.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad you get to see it. Yeah. I mean, you try to do all these things intentionally, and then sometimes it goes over people's head, but it's beautiful that you actually recognize that. You know, I think that's, you know, he's a very complex, I mean, he has his own movie, I think. You know, I think I've known Sung for like 20 years. And so to get such a big star, there's no way I get that kind of star unless we're friends. And you know, it wasn't a big role because the story is about the women, but at the same time, I'm like, we need to make this character more complex. You know, he's actually loosely based off of one of the other actors' life, Pai Gwet, right? That Pai Gwet character. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that went to jail at 13 and he got out at 35. And his perspective on the world is just like, whoa, man, that's a lot, you know, because, you know, and not necessarily as much, you know, depression as Rambo had, right? And it's just darkness. But at the same time, you know, if you're robbed of your teenage years and your 20s, and yet you live in the underworld, and that is that's where you're from, like, you know, those are the years, the prime, that's the only time it's fun to be a gangster, I think. And to be robbed of that, to come of that, you know, with this, you know, idea of what Asian masculinity really is, and, you know, like, it's a lot to live up to, right? As an Asian American man, since you're like 7'6", you realize like you are the lowest on the totem pole as a man, right? And so that pressure, whether it be with the school kids or on TV or stories, you know, you feel that, right? And so what happens is, the gangster, you have power, but, you know, that power is going to come out in really, really odd and terrible ways, you know, if you don't really understand where that insecurity comes from. And, you know, that was something I really wanted to make sure we did with Rambo, was like, make sure that he's not just this one-dimensional thug, evil villain. Mm-hmm. You know, he has to have these, you know, because no one's, in movies, people are good and bad, but in life, no one's really just good or bad. It's just, you know, we're all complex, you know, and I think that was very important because, you know, we're telling a story about a gangster, and it's like, we only know one kind of gangster, the ones that just shoot everybody, you know?
Yeah, and the thing, tell me if I'm wrong, but there was one line where it's mentioned that, like, Daima has three sons. It's three, right? And, like, one of them works on Wall Street. We never get to see him.
Yeah, well, he's the one at the wedding.
He's the one at the wedding, but then after that, it's like, I felt a kind of presence that he left, where, to me, I wondered if, for Rambo, if he was trying to measure up to this brother, because he never got the chance to become what his brother was, right? Like, his future was kind of like determined for him based on this one action he did as a child. And it's almost like, to me, there's this bit of resentment that he has to his mom for, yeah, where once he came out, she could have been like, okay, you did this, you served your time, go and do something where you're not involved in this world. But she kind of drew him in and kept him there. And then it's I wanted to ask you about that, because I was like, maybe am I like feeling this, or is it just me? Because I just
It's totally there. I mean, I'm probably, my execution was, you know, there's a lot of things going on. I think this is more of a TV series than anything, but, you know, it definitely was there, right? I mean, this brother. And I think, I mean, every parent wants to be proud of their kids, right? Mm-hmm. And Asian parents definitely have that. And, you know, Asian parents, especially the immigrant ones, they don't, you know, they want you to grow up in Chinatown, but they want you to move out, right? They want you to get out. No one wants you. But Rambo has no choice. There's nowhere for him to go. And so, you know, it's almost with reluctance that Daima is, you know, bringing him back into her fold, because that's not a world that she wants him in. Right.
Yeah.
But he has no choice, you know, with who he is and where he is in life. Right. And, you know, even being able to have that kind of communication working with your mom, I don't think anyone would be that happy working with their mom.
Not in that environment, for sure. Right. And not one where, you know, one mistake can lead to like a catastrophe, which is eventually what does happen. Like, things fall apart quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to talk. There's two very interesting things I want to talk about. Your editing for this is very interesting. I love the visual cues you use. Like, some of the things that caught my ear were the use of things like the fish tank and these red plastic bags. There was a scene where just before Pai Gui dies, I saw that is like there's a spray plastic bag and it has water dripping on it. I'm like, with the right lighting, that water could be mistaken for blood. So I wanted to ask you about these little visual cues you put in throughout the film.
Oh, I love that you saw that, right? I mean, there's a lot of those, and I mean, making a film is thinking that much about it before you actually shoot it. There's definitely a lot of things that I really wanted to make sure I captured. And yeah, Chinatown, the red bag army, man, it's just like, if you really look, it's just red bags everywhere in Chinatown. If you really look. Before growing up, for me, it was pink bags, but then somewhere, I think red bags were cheaper, so they made red bags. So yeah, the red bags are everywhere, and I always feel like that's you don't get more Chinatown than that, right? And it's a subtle element, but it was something that I was production design. It was always easy for them to make sure we had a ton of red bags all over the place. And that's it was important. It was important to make sure I captured that small nuance, right? Because that's something that if you didn't spend a lot of time in Chinatown, it's something you don't notice, right? And that's something that I guarantee you is not in any of these. I mean, in these Iron Fist shows or these things, they're just not there, right? That being said, yeah, and the idea of the fish tanks. I mean, Arowana Films and me, I love fish. I'm a Pisces, but really, more of the focus was really more about the idea of water, right? Because
Yes, I was going to
water
ask
is a
that.
huge element for me, but also representing in this film is the idea of crossing bodies of water to, your destination. And that was, something that me and the cinematographer world will always try and talk about. Well, how do we fit more water elements into this? It was an actual absolute, headache, but a nice little visual challenge because I felt like, with this little water dripping here in this moment, yeah, it's a little more effort to get that happen. But in the end, I think the viewer is gonna understand like there's this idea of fluidity, right? And being able to adjust and evolve, just like, what Bruce Lee always says, it's be water, right?
Water, yeah.
And I think that's important. That was important for me. That was important for the visuals and, the overall story, and the idea too, even a snake head, right, is an actual fish on top of being a smuggler. And the snakehead fish is actually the northern snakehead in the U.S. has been an invasive species that they are trying to get rid of, the Asian monster fish. When the reality is like they were so afraid of it happening that would wipe out all their imported fish anyways, game fish. They actually made the populations go up because now there's more food. And I think that was it's just the idea, right? When people don't like change, and especially when people like to blame other cultures, minorities for that. It's the snake is a perfect symbol of that idea. In the long run, they actually benefit everybody. So.
Actually, I you that's the perfect segue to my next session because I was going to ask about the water because I just love how you use it as trans like you mentioned it's about transitioning it's like it's about moving forward and I also saw it as a way of like changing the story because I found like with the water scenes especially big moments happen right after so it's like they like water moves from one state to another but then it also is a very powerful force. A very subtly powerful force, like water can erode rock, like over time, but it makes its own way. It has to find its own way, and like back home in the ocean, back home in Barbados, we say the sea will always find its way back home, and that means that no matter what happens, the sea will always find a way to reclaim the land.
Yeah,
It will always
no, for
find
sure. We
the water.
are powerless against the ocean, I think. It's the
Exactly.
most powerful force in this world. And I think that's, even when I talked about the idea of this family, right, in New York Chinatown, and the idea of like, she could fight them or she could just be with them, right? And if you can, there was this early idea of like you can't fight the ocean, right? And you kind of can go, you can't fight it, but you can use it as a force and momentum to propel you forward. Yet at the same time, you don't necessarily need to go the same direction as everybody else. And I think that's what Sister C does. She uses that momentum to go and make her own way in the environment and space. And water is a huge metaphor for that, right? Because it can break off, it can make its own path versus being a part of the bigger body. And I think that's what, New York Chinatown always felt like that for me. It felt like this place that's very much underwater, right? Very much like people are just kind of like moving through it slowly. And if you can find the right current, you can find the right path, you're in a good place to move out of there.
Yeah, I think the visual metaphor of the fish tanks actually really stand up for me, because I just saw it as like, you have all these people. I love that you actually kind of refer to like Chinatown as a fish tank, 'cause that's exactly what I was thinking. That is this contained space with all of these people who, a lot of them are immigrants who came across either through over a plane or by boat, are struggling to like survive. And like when you have too many fish in a tank, they can actually eventually die.
You can't breathe, right?
And so either you make more space for them, you take some out and put them into another tank, mm-hmm. or you watch them slowly there. And that's how I kind of saw the story going, because like you have all these people struggling for power. Even like with Rambo, he's starting to like buck against his mother's will. And Paiguay, he's doing the same thing. They're all like trying to find their own power in this small space. And like some are eventually gonna die because like you can't have all of these power structures existing in such a contained space.
Yeah, no, I think you got it. I mean, that's a beautiful idea. I really tried to think about, you know, early parts of the film, right? And I think, you know, and then when you get into production and you get into characters, you're just trying to figure out how to tell the story, right? But I think the intentions were there, and I'm glad they still lasted and they reached the viewer, the audience.
Yeah, for sure. And I also want to talk a bit about something that I don't think I've ever seen it in another film, where you talk about two types of illegal immigration. We have the snakehead, which is the Chinese, which are the Chinese importers, but then you take it across to Mexico.
Yeah.
And we have the coyotes.
Yes.
So you have Chinese and you have Mexican immigrants existing in the same space. And I don't think I've ever actually seen that in a film done the same way, where you're talking about how illegal immigration actually occurs both by land and by sea. That you show how they actually connect, because I don't think a lot of people would think that you'd have Chinese immigrants coming through Mexico to get into the US, but it shows that they will legit go as far as they have to get to where they need to.
Yeah. I mean, in my research, and you know, I think for movies, you kind of dumb it down and you simplify it, right? But the networks around the world for these snakeheads are just incredible. And they have to be in places that are more friendly, that are even more Wild Wild West like, you know, where there's just even more and less regulation than there is, you know. The US is not an easy place to get into. In my research, a lot of Chinese ended up in South America, right? I mean, and a lot of times it's easier to get to Guatemala than it is, I mean, you can't get into LA, but you can get to Guatemala, right? And then we all know that there are plenty of coyotes that will take you from anywhere in South America to across the border. And, you know, there are these stories. I mean, if anything, if you look, I mean, the Border Patrol has a good amount of, you know, everyone in the news always talks about, you know, Latinos and South Americans, but, you know, I don't remember the numbers, but I remember there was last year, about 1,100 Chinese were caught coming over the border, right? And that was, no one ever talks about that, but they are, and they're not necessarily coming over with their Chinese coyote, they're coming over through coyotes, right? Mm-hmm. They may have even more money than some of these South Americans, right? That they're able to pay more for these sort of moments to come over. And, you know, smuggling is something that I felt like, you know, it's constantly evolving and changing because of the routes. And so, you know, and it's also the people that are moving are very different, and that's always changing. And so these networks are completely always evolving, and something that may have been there before is not there anymore, right? The safe house that was over in Mexico City is gone, you know? And so there's constantly evolving, and yet at the same time, you know, the snakehead in China, the snakehead in New York has to make sure that this cargo and these people are going to get to where they're going to get to, because otherwise they don't get paid, right? Mm-hmm. And they also lose trust, right? Because someone like a Sister Ping, a Dai Ma character, once they start losing people, no one's going to trust them, and no one's going to pay them, right? And I think that's what, you know, actually the true story was actually really was like, see, everyone trusted her. And so, yeah, having both those elements, I think, you know, underworlds, no one other than worlds, right? I mean, they have to, because their worlds, they need those kind of resources that only they can find others that can provide that.
Right. And speaking about trust. So that's another one of my other questions is, like, for what they're doing, for all of these characters, they have to have trust in each other. But then when the trust starts to slowly fade away, that's when they start making decisions. Like, Asuka had me make, there was a moment where I was like, girl, what are you doing? This is a bad decision. And this is the one where she's agreeing to smuggling this family without Daima's permission or without her knowing. And I'm like, this could backfire on you in a very bad way, because she's discussing it with all these people around. Any of these people could turn on you because they could want to getting good with Daima, you know? Like, why are you talking so loud? I'm like, what are you doing? I saw that as her trying, realizing that she needs to start to make her own moves. Sure. Because her initial thing was to get in good with the family, with Daima, because she realized that's how she's going to make it. But then she realized she can't really trust Daima, because she saw Daima doing things and she's like, I can't trust this woman fully. Sure. So I'm going to have to make my moves. But then that's like, in this community, if trust is lost, like, things fall apart very, very quickly and very, very badly.
Yeah. Well, that really actually stems from the idea of what it is to be American, right? Mm-hmm. American culture is very individualistic, right? Asian culture and a lot of other cultures, it's more about the whole than the individual. And I think she has to learn that over that process of, people, in the end, Daima is using her, right? Mm-hmm. Using her. Maybe she will live her in a fold eventually, but she sees something in her that, like, okay, I'm going to use you. Right, because you have these skills and these abilities. Yet in the end, like, she's, Daima is no problem getting rid of her. And so I think, for me, it was really the idea, the juxtaposition between being American and being Asian, right, in terms of the cultural things and then the idea of individual versus the whole. And, I think that's what happens in America, right? Like, you realize, like, the whole is not as important as what I can get from myself, right? And she gets a taste of that. She gets a taste of what Daima is all about, what these people are doing. And, I think that's just the reality of any sort of underworld story of, realizing that, the choices I make are not necessarily mine anymore when you're following a family's sort of, underworld theme. Right. I think that their mission is different than what she is there for.
Yeah. And going a bit from that, one of the things that I really wanted to talk to you about is Siga's perception of weakness. So she says something very interesting at the beginning, which is like, one of the ways for women to have to pay off snakeheads or even coyotes is prostitution. They're forced into prostitution. And she says, that's for the weak, and she's not weak. And I wanted to talk about that, because as a woman, like, for me, when she said that, I was like, but that it's not just that these women are weak, is that they're forced into this, that they have no choice. So I wanted to talk about that part of her, because I was like, where's the empathy for these other women? Why? And the thing is, women were nice to her.
For sure. So there's, like, I mean, I didn't get into it as much in the story as much as I'd like to, because it was there and really explored. A lot of the Asian women that I've spoken to that are in that world and prostitution, massage parlors, like, they have a choice. They had a choice, and they make that choice based off of, what do I want to do? Do I want to go work and make full dumplings, or do I want to do this? I think she's a lot different in a sense where she had to overcome that strength and that weakness, right? Mm-hmm. Because she's born into prostitution, because her mother was a prostitute and she's born into it. And she figured out at a certain age, like, I don't want to do this anymore, right? And that's her idea of a weakness. Yeah, I'm not saying that for all, obviously. A lot of them don't have a choice. But specifically this Chinatown world and a lot of the women that do come over, they have a choice. Again, like, do they want, it's choices they make, and, some are empowered enough to be like, yeah, this is what I do. Yet I think for her and Sister C's mind, it's the weak, what she sees as weak, right? Mm. Versus the overall story. And maybe, it's great that you bring that up, because I didn't really thought of it in that perspective, but I've always felt it more as an individual choice for her versus what she's saying about all of them, because from her background, she had to overcome that weakness, right? To get out of that world.
Because the thing to me is, for any woman that has to be in that environment, I didn't think of it as them being weak, because that you have, like, you're, they have to, like, every day know what's coming and then get up the next day and do the same thing over. And they're, and these women are working towards the same goal as she is, to get out from under the thumb of these people that are demanding this exorbitant amount of money from them. So I just thought it was interesting, but I can see where she was coming from too, because she's thinking, I made it out, so therefore I'm stronger than you. But then also she was like, I'm willing to also do these more violent acts, so therefore I'm also there stronger than you in that aspect as well. So yeah. She's just a very interesting character, because there are women that think about that think that way. So I do like that you added that in, but it was just like really curious.
No, it's a great point. It's a great point. I mean, I think, you know, and I almost feel like too, there's a false sense of confidence that she has, right? There's a sense of like, she's all powerful superhero actually character, but you know, it's overcompensating, right? It's over, like, she's going out, she knows she has to go the distance. Like, well, I'm gonna go 120% the distance. Otherwise she's not gonna survive, and she's not gonna make a name for her. She's not gonna, you know, exist.
Yeah. And, but then also speaking of strength, I think she does show strength in one way, and this is where we'll end, where the film ends. And she makes this very, what could be a potentially devastating decision, because she's not sure how it will affect her going on down the line, but she's sure in the moment that this is the right one, and this is about her daughter. And it's kind of like a follow through from her conversation with Daima throughout the whole time, where she's talking about my goal is what I want, and Daima having no idea that her goal was her daughter. And like you talked about the individualism, and it's kind of the same thing, where she wanted her daughter to have a life where she can make decisions for herself, where she has that individualism and she doesn't have the family. Because if she has stayed with Daima, her daughter would have somehow, some way ended up entangled in that life. And she didn't want that for her. She didn't want that particular type of family life for her daughter. So she's like, I'm going to take my own way, and I'm going to have to give my daughter her own path too. Her daughter has no idea this is happening, but she's setting her daughter on a path away from a life that would have probably broken her and torn her apart.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that goes to the idea of realizing, you know, why we're doing anything in life, right? This movie really is about understanding where you come from, why you make decisions, where the root of any of your goals are coming from, right? And, you know, I think her goals in the beginning of the film are very, you know, they feel very generous, but it's actually very selfish, right? She's actually, it's for her. And then she realizes at the end, like, this is actually for me and not for her, right? And in the end, you know, it's like the hardest choice you could possibly ever make. And, you know, I feel like I tried to attempt it. I'm not a mother, so I have no idea what that feels like. But at the same time, like, this is probably one of the hardest decisions she has to make. And if she has to go through any kind of arc, that's the decision she has to make. And realizing, like, okay, like, the individual versus the whole, and going, you know, coming back out of being American and realizing, oh, it's about, you know, her. If it's about her, that then is not about me anymore. And I have to sacrifice for that. And I think that's, you know, the ultimate choice that she has to make in the arc as her character. Because if she goes and takes her, then it's like, well, then the gangsters are going to go and get her, and there's weakness to that. And, you know, I mean, that girl has pretty good potential life, right, with those parents in New York City. And so, you know, it's not something she could provide, but at the same time, like, you know, what she's become, she also knows, like, I'm not ready to be a mother, right? I mean, I think we see that, like, I can't, since she being a mother, it's like, okay, that's a whole other movie just to figure out how to become one, right? And yet the desire and the choices she makes, it's like, you know, when people make decisions, the easy decision to get to the hard place, you know, and that decision is not dealing with the hard stuff. It's just doing the easy things, you know. You want to do, you know, and I think that's sort of what she does, right? She takes the easy route, the things that she's good at. She's good at doing underworld stuff. She's good at smuggling. She's good with violence. But the hard choice would be for her to spend time with the daughter, would be, you know, develop a relationship, you know, get a nice home for her. You know, those things she wasn't going for. She found enjoyment and satisfaction in, you know, the underworld.
Yeah, no, I love that part about it. I love that ending particularly because to me it said so much about sometimes the hardest thing is letting go. Even no matter how hard you have to fight to hold on to something, right. You eventually have to decide to let it go for the better. And I think that was the perfect way to end it because that is a happy ending, whether some people might not see it that way, but I do. I'm like, she's doing what's right for her and for her daughter, and that's a happy ending to me.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, right? Even breaking the idea of like the American gangster film, right? Of like the snitch, right? I mean, it's like the snitch is just, it's folklore that the boss gangsters want the younger guys to say to save themselves. And, you know, it's the whole, but it's not really the whole. The whole is the individual bosses that are trying to save themselves. And I think that's what the choices she had to make, right? I mean, it's not for the righteous choice is usually not for you. It's not your own choice in the underworld.
Thank you so much for speaking to me. I really enjoyed our conversation and I really enjoyed the film. And congrats on it showing at 2 festivals. Does it have any more coming up that you would like to announce?
No, I mean, we're just going to be in theaters October 29th. So that's and theaters in VOD and October 29th. So that's the bigger thing I got to start telling everyone. So that's exciting.
Okay, I'll make sure to put that in the post for the podcast. Thank you so much, Evan, for speaking to me. This is, I think, like, congrats on your first debut, Phil, and also for landing the cast that you got because everyone was phenomenal. Okay. So congrats to you and the entire team.
Thank you.
So everyone, thank you for joining me for this new episode of Caroline Talks. This was such a great conversation with writer and director Abby Jackson Leung about his debut feature film Snakehead. It's a great film. If you have an opportunity to see it, please do. I think it's an important film to discuss immigration, especially the female perspective on immigration in America and the Chinese experience in Chinese culture, and I think also heritage, because the film does talk about the history of Chinese immigrants in America and in New York specifically. I really enjoyed this film. I really enjoyed talking to Evan, so I appreciate him coming on to talk with me, and I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. You can find more interviews on the buttwhythepodcast.com as well as on my YouTube channel under my name, Caroline Hines. You can follow me on social media at Carrie CNH12, that's CARRIECNH12. You can find my two other podcasts. So Here's What Happened, that I co-host with my co-host Lanisha Campbell, as well as my Beyond the Romance drama podcast / YouTube channel, or YouTube playlist, I should say. And you can, and also if you would like, take part in my live tweets with hashtag dramas with Carrie and hashtag Saturday Night Sci-Fi, which I do every Saturday night at 10 p.m. Eastern. And until the next episode, everyone, please stay safe.